Cutting Through the Spin. The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Good morning again. Very welcome back to you. We were talking to Michael a little earlier on, who got away quite lightly, if the truth be told, though not insignificantly, following a Facebook scam where he was drawn into investing in the first instance relatively a little amount of money. He was shown really quite a good return, then lodged a little bit more money, and then was asked to pay tax, and then the red flag started, not because of paying tax, but just in the way in which it was phrased. A caller asks, how come with all technology these gangs can't be traced? Because they employ the exact same technology to avoid being traced, and often they're one or two steps ahead. I think that's the problem. Greg, Sky News had done a programme on fraud. Fair play to them. We cover it on a weekly here to try and get the message out locally. A caller says Facebook largely to blame too for allowing these scammers to advertise without vetting on their platforms. Indeed, I don't understand how... You see, what happens, I think these people create accounts. I think they gather up... You know, like, how I'll tell you how they work it. It's really quite simple. Is they start an account, they go into often a lost and found page. You've seen these lost and founds, haven't you? A missing child or a missing dog or what have you. They get hundreds of you to share it. Then they change that ad... they change that picture of the lost and found that all people have shared that you trust, and they replace it with a crypto scam. And they don't need it to be up forever. They only need it to be up for an hour or two. Eventually it gets flagged by Facebook. But in that period of time, after you've shared the dog or the missing child, they've edited that post for it to be a crypto scam. And because your friends are sharing it, you go, right, okay, this might be all right. And that's how it works. So Facebook could be doing more, but we also need to be more aware of ourselves. A caller says, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. Nobody will give you money for nothing, but investment is investment. It is something an awful lot of people do. I'm a very vulnerable old lady. I really needed money. I lost €123,000. They asked me to do an ad and I was offered €40,000. I said no in the afternoon. They offered me €150,000. The companies that took my money were Kronovlar, Quantum and Arbitrage. When I contacted the bank, I had a 10-point sheet that recommended why I shouldn't do it. It's a bit late now. They did nothing to help me. They lost €123,000. Those companies, by the way, could be legitimate companies that have been cloned as well too. So the name doesn't always give it away. Back to conversations about road safety. Speaking of accidents, there is another accident at the junction of New Mills, another area being ignored by the local authority that needs to be looked at. Another, Kilmacrenan Village is the worst area in Donegal for speeding. It's only a matter of time before there's a serious collision. The population of Kilmacrenan has doubled in the last 10 years. Speed ramps or traffic lights is a must. Very few cars are sticking to the 50-kilometre speed limit, and that junction is particularly dangerous. And there was a pretty serious crash there earlier this year, so I do concur with you there. I live in Glen Swilly. There is a collision here every other week and the councillors are doing nothing about it. I presume they're raising the issue. What powers do they have to do something about it? I don't know. And another caller pointed out, we were speaking to Mary a little earlier on. She was talking about the dangers of the road outside her house, outside schools and what have you. And very sadly, as we were speaking, a crash occurred on the very stretch of road that she says is incredibly dangerous, an awful twist of fate, and hopefully no one seriously injured. Can you ask the listeners what the top of Errigal is like today? I would love to climb it. Oh, I don't know. How do you find that information out? The weather's going to change a little later on. I would steer clear, but anyway. It was evident that an election was looming when the constant attack on Sinn Féin began by the opposition, aided and abetted by the mainstream media. Yet a child who's been missing for 2 years, children's allowance was continued to be paid while it was thought the child was in the north, and it's barely made the headlines. I have to disagree with you. That story of the young child has been in all the papers since the Gardaí revealed that they believed him to be... They believed him to be deceased. So I can't agree with you in relation to that one. And just in relation to the Sinn Féin story, I think some of the coverage has been, people have been waiting in the wings to sort of hop on this. That being said, there are genuine issues there that Sinn Féin needed to address. And some would argue that they didn't do it very effectively. So Sinn Féin, yes, I think they've been the victim of the opposition will always have a go Your opposition, or the government in this case, will always have a go and vice versa. I think some of the mainstream coverage of it has been, as I say, waiting in the wings for Sinn Féin. But Sinn Féin has to take a great deal of responsibility itself too in how it was, how it's been handling some of this stuff as well. And I would say there are people within the party that would agree. Greg, it's hard to believe that with all the child protection agencies we now have, that a child can go missing for 2 years. Back in the day, if you were missing from school, the Gardaí would be at your door to find out why. So sad that that poor wee boy in Drogheda had no one, it would seem. Incredibly sad. No doubt about it. Has no one highlighted this fellow on his bike with a box on the front who takes his children to these schools on their... I'm not going to just go into that one at the moment because it's identifying an individual. So I'll reread that and come back to that one. It's a road safety concern someone has, but I'll reread that and come back to it. Could you wish Lowellan Pobal na Rossan, Dunlow Library, all the best on their upcoming 25th anniversary celebrations? And a huge congratulations to Fiona Sweeney, who's been there since the beginning. Yes, of course. And also Michael, who was in with us just before 10, I meant to mention that he is under the care of the renal staff at Letterkenny University Hospital at the moment, and wanted us to pass on his good wishes to the people working there and looking after him. So happy to do that. Hi, Greg. John McAteer, how about he for Donegal Person of the Year? Why not? I don't see why not. John has contributed as much as many people has in platforming stories for the community, his own community and further afield. It's up to you who to nominate, by the way. That's just a very important element of that. If you believe someone deserves a nomination, get on the website, the Donegal Dublin Association, and make that nomination. A caller sent us an image of another building on Letterkenny Main Street that they believe is unsafe and should be tossed down. It's a risky building down from the post office, they say, and looking on, it doesn't look the safest, I would have to agree. The Palestinian ambassador is Dr. Jelan Waba Abdelmashib, and she joins us on the programme now. Doctor, good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning.
We are speaking to you ahead of a visit to Donegal later this week, which we'll talk to in a moment. But just your reflections on what we are seeing happening to your people as we speak. We thought that maybe there was an off-ramp with recent events that might have stopped the bombing, stopped the murder, stopped the unrelenting attacks. That hasn't happened. There's no words really, I think, to describe how dire the situation is.
Actually, since the 7th of October, Israel got beyond actually rage and revenge for the Palestinian people, we realized that for the first couple of weeks, a month, we thought that, okay, it's the revenge. However, it's violating every international law and humanitarian law. But after a year and with intensifying its carnage, with intensifying its campaign against certain cities in Gaza, and of course it is already expanded its attack in Lebanon, but I talk about in the last couple of weeks intensifying its airstrike and bombardment of the city of Jabalia. It's in the northern part of Gaza. It gives us clear idea that the main goal of Israel is to annihilate the Palestinian people. They don't want to see any Palestinian in this land. Talking about Gaza as well, the West Bank is under their attack constantly. If you maybe follow the news in the last couple of days, there was raiding to Al-Aqsa Mosque with hundreds of Israeli colonial settlers. Coming back to Gaza, the last couple of weeks were completely even beyond anyone's imagination, because Israel stopped attacking severely, killing yesterday more than 75 people in one day. Talking about no food, no water, of course electricity since the beginning of of this war. There is no electricity. People live in a tent, displaced for several times. The least anyone in Gaza were displaced for 6-7 times. The people, the 2.3 million, if I wanted to say two, it's 2 million, let me say, because there are some people managed to be evacuated by some countries, but the majority of Gazan people still there, displaced in the southern part of Gaza. Talking about the northern part, this is the plan of these Israeli generals of their occupation forces. They decided just to get rid of all the people who live in the northern part of Gaza. And by the way, the northern part of Gaza have, before the war, 400,000 Palestinians live in this area. And talk about this people, they didn't leave even after 1 year of this genocidal war. So the situation is dire. There is no hospital. The hospitals are barely working there, of course, under constant attack from the Israeli occupation forces.
How many people is it believed that have been killed? Civilians. There are different figures that are used. Often they come, from Hamas, the Hamas Health Ministry, and they are disputed. I'm sure you've seen figures that you can trust. How many people do we believe at this point that have been killed? And of course, that won't talk to the multiple of that will have been maimed. Or suffering, life-changing injuries.
Yes. I mean, when you talk about the Gaza Ministry of Health, it's actually the Palestinian Ministry of Health.
Okay, my mistake.
And yes, the Palestinian authorities still control the three sector, three ministries, the Ministry of Social Welfare, the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Education. So all the figures that come from Gaza, it's officially the Ministry of Health for the Palestinian Authority. And the number that I received, and last number I received was last week, it is 42,650 people. Of course, I didn't count the last couple of days, the people who were killed in Jabalia refugee camps. But this is the official number. Doesn't count the people who are still under the rubble. And when I say this figure, it's with names, with identity number, and exactly registered by all the hospitals that they use, or until now run by the Ministry of Health. So all the names there were published by the Ministry of Health of the Palestinian Authority in the last month. And when I said this figure, it's the figure published by the Ministry of Health. We have more than 99,000 and 600 and something, this is the number of injured people that registered by names and by numbers, identity numbers. So all of these are registered officially.
Everyone, in any case, condemned the horrific events of October 7th. It was unbelievable what happened. And I think you sort of talked to earlier, while you wouldn't have endorsed it, there was an expectation there'd be a proportionate response, whatever that might be. I don't know. And I find it difficult to talk in these terms because we're talking about human life at the same time. But we've gone far beyond that. How difficult is it, as you as a Palestinian, to sort of hear the words? You hear words from the United States, you hear words coming from Brussels, but at the same time, Israel is given carte blanche, Israel is given the freedom to do whatever it wishes. And now it's extended its activities into Lebanon and elsewhere as well. God knows what its response to Iran might be. How difficult is it to watch on, and how hollow do the words feel when you hear people say things, but at the same time Israel is endorsed and facilitated in doing what it's doing to your people?
To be honest with you, yesterday I don't put on my own kind of quotes using the Twitter or the X. This is the first time actually to talk about how we, the Palestinian, I don't want to say disappointed because this is not the word, but we are shocked from the silence of this world, from the silence of this international community. I mean, we live in a world that is judged by international law, or it's like, you know, when you feel that there is a law, you at least feel some kind of trust that there will be, fair judgmental over certain areas in this world, or certain like, you know, over what we are passing through. But when you see all these UN organizations or international organization talking about the ICJ or the ICC, even like, you know, they postponed this warrant for Netanyahu and some of his governments. Like, I don't want to be like, you know, saying that I'm happy to say that, or I'm disappointed to say that, but this is for the generation that will come, this is a big shock to see that we live in a world that the superpowers can decide everything against, like, you know, the weaker countries or the weaker people. But by the way, this is completely different when you talk about the Palestinians, because even with all these atrocities, with all these acts of genocide against them, they are still show resilience. They still steadfast, and they don't want to leave. From the voices that I heard from Gaza, from the West Bank, we don't want to leave. This is our land, and we believe that we have a just cause, and we have the right to stay there, the right to self-determination. Mm-hmm. This is what makes us, like, you know, see how is our future. Yes, there is international law. One day, this law will be applied, not because of Israel or the United States or the others, because this is how the nation of the world wanted. And I see millions around the world, they protest for justice for Palestine.
The thing that is particularly uncomfortable for me is the, and it's not even hidden, it's there, is the different value we put on life. So a child's life in, say, for instance, Ukraine is valued very highly. A child's life in Gaza is worthless. That's not my view. That's how it's. You understand what I'm saying here. That is how we. And we're all complicit in it, because we all elect these people, really, and they speak for us. So unless we speak out, that is how it is. That a Gazan child is worth nothing, clearly, to the international community. Whilst, for an example, a Ukrainian child, rightly so, is there to be protected and talked of and mourned and what have you on an international scale. Were you of the view that Yahya Sinwar's death might have been a catalyst, or could have been used as a catalyst, an off-ramp, if you like, for Israel to end their actions in Gaza? And perhaps, I suppose, the fact that they've almost redoubled their efforts, does that confirm to you that the motivation isn't really necessarily about eliminating or deconstructing Hamas, that it's more about the wider population?
Let me first come to the double standard that you talk about. I just wanted here to exclude Ireland, not because I'm the ambassador here to Ireland, but I know sincerely about the efforts that paid by the Irish government, and I know that the Irish government reflects on the nations and the Irish people, within the EU or the United Nations. I know that Ireland leads in when it comes to the Palestinian people's rights. I just don't want to go, like, you know, deep within, like, you know, when I talk about Hamas, because at the end of the day, I'm representing the Palestinian people. Like, the reflections that come from the people, whether they agree or disagree with Hamas or with Sinwar or with all these people, like, you know, will never be happy to see any Palestinian killed by the Israelis. This is something that we will never accept, like any Palestinians. At the end of the day, he is Palestinians like any other Palestinians on the ground. Yes, this is different views from others, but this is how we see it. Like, you know, I will not be happy for any Palestinian to be killed by or taken by Israel. And I don't want to, like, you know, talk longer about this, because the the attack or this genocidal act of Israel against the Palestinian, it's beyond anyone's, like, you know.
But with that in mind, Doctor, and sorry to interrupt you, with that in mind, and listen, our listeners are very intelligent here. They know this didn't all begin on October 7th, okay? They know that there's an awful lot that happened prior to that, from both sides, but primarily, I think, as the oppressor, people would see it as being Israel. That being said, and this is to attribute no blame to the general population as such, but could the Palestinians have done more to reject sort of the ethos and the goals of Hamas to protect themselves, if you know what I mean? Because it's not often incredibly clear what level of support Hamas actually has. And do you believe that perhaps, and this is to say not to attribute responsibility to the general population as such, but do you think they could have done more to say, right, Imra, you seem to have an awful lot of money in your bunker and what have you, and, you know, we're starving here above ground. You know, your actions, your words have brought this upon us to some extent, to show that they, Hamas, do not necessarily represent them. It's a strange question, and I apologise, it's quite a confusing question, but do you understand where I'm coming from, that they could, the Palestinians could have rejected Hamas and maybe prevented some of this?
Like, Hamas wasn't before the first Intifada. I mean, there was nothing, something called Hamas before that. And since the 1948, when Israel was created, and like even before, like the partition plan that gives the Israelis or the Jewish people the right to be on 55% of Palestine, until today, Israel exceeded and violated the international law and UN resolutions of 1947, expand until, like, you know, the 1967 borders, expand more on a daily basis. There are more lands expropriated from the West Bank. Israel built more than 250 settlements, colonial settlements in the West Bank on stolen lands of the Palestinians. I mean, and control 62% of the West Bank, the area of the with West Bank, with more than 700,000 Israeli settlers in this live in this area. So, I mean, Israel, I don't want to put it just to justification that Israel is doing that because of Hamas. Israel is an occupying power, and they are colonizers, and they taking the land by force. This is what we, the Palestinian, witness in the last, like, year, of that Israel doesn't want to see any Palestinians on the Palestinian lands. And this is, of course, in contradictions and violating the international law.
But could you see a solution whereby you as a Palestinian could live next to Israel as neighbors, in a two-state solution, for an example, providing, say, for instance, some of the situations that you describe in the West Bank and elsewhere weren't to prevail. So if Palestine were, there was no longer this level of control exercised or this plantation, or however one might want to phrase it, do you believe there is a future whereby Palestine can exist beside Israel peacefully? From a Palestinian perspective.
Yes, I if I stop hope, I wouldn't live until now. And you wouldn't see Palestinians still. Like, you know, we are more than 7 million Palestinians live in Palestine. And we still see that we have the right to exist on our sovereign state of Palestine. It's not us the problem. It's the other side who doesn't want to recognize the rights of the Palestinians. It is the international community who gave this right to Israel to exist in 1947. So as you given this right, you should help, as you helped Israel over the years, you should, I mean, the international community must take actions, must take serious action, actually, to help the Palestinians to build their, I mean, this occupation must end. The occupation of the 1967 borders must end. You cannot just, you know, talk about or around the international law. This is, I mean, if we wanted just to discuss how the international law is fair or unfair, just or unjust, I mean, we will not live on this earth. So there is a right, and there is a violated country of this international law. There must be accountability. Israel must be held accountable of their occupation and their colonization of Palestine. Other than this, I mean, I don't have anything to say except the resilience of the Palestinians, the hope that the Palestinians since 1948, they still believe and they are in Palestine. We don't see any other homeland. This is our homeland.
Okay. You're coming to Donegal on Thursday. You're going to visit Skull on Pobble. That's Community Hall in Anagri. You're also going to attend an event held in the Council Chamber in Dunloe on the Friday, the 25th of October at 10:15 a.m. and then visiting a school in Gweedore. And also, I presume, an important opportunity to meet Palestinian families living in the area, because I think, I don't know if it's survivor's guilt or whatever, and that might sound like a coarse phrase, I don't mean it like that, but often when I speak to people living here that aren't in countries that are going through awful situations, it's very, very difficult, because firstly they feel removed, they feel guilty for not being there, but then also very fearful for their countrymen, their families and what have you. So important for you as an ambassador to meet Palestinians living in this region, I'm sure.
Yes, I mean, I would like to thank Councillor Micheál Colm. I don't know if I pronounced his name, like, you know, Magula Isbui. I hope that I pronounce it, but I know that Micheál.
He will forgive you. I think there's plenty of people in this county that also struggle with the pronunciation, but you did okay.
But anyway, Micheál, I'm 100% sure of Micheál. So I would like to thank him because he organized this visit to Glentyze. And I will be meeting the people, and I'm sure that it's a public meeting that will be, like, you know, Irish and maybe some Palestinians. I would like to extend my sincere gratitude to Ireland for hosting these families. And with all the problems that we heard about housing and about other things, I know that the Palestinians are welcomed from the Irish government and from the Irish people. I will listen to them. I've been there a few times in other, like, parts of Donegal, Letterkenny and others. But today, this week, I will be looking forward to this visit to meet Palestinians. If I will be, like, you know, I know that they are in hosted by Ireland, so they are even get better than anything that I would offer. But anyway, I will listen to them. We speak the same language, so I will understand. If I will be able to help, I will do my best to help. But I know that they are in good hands among Irish people in Donegal and the Irish government.
Okay, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Jilan Waba Abdelmajid. Thank you so much for your time. Take
thank
care
you,
of yourself. She is the ambassador, Palestinian ambassador to Ireland. And we can say hello to Brian Cannon, Director of Roads and Transport with Donegal County Council. Good morning, Brian. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Okay, so I suppose just to reflect on the impacts of Storm Ashley, starting with flooding, some flooding inland and on some roads, I noted. What about that and any coastal flooding as a result, too, I suppose, of the spring tides, Brian? What happened across the county?
Yeah, Greg, we're in a period of high tides anyway last week and into the weekend, and that did bring some localised coastal flooding on Friday evening in Donegal Town, Anagri and Carrickfinnan. And Buncrana. And we also had some spot flooding inland. There was quite a lot of heavy rain on Friday afternoon, so we had some spot flooding inland in the Finn Valley, up reaches of the Finn Valley on Friday evening and in a number of other locations. But I suppose the big focus then was Storm Ashley. And members of our severe weather assessment team attended a briefing on Saturday morning with what's called the National Directorate for Fire and Emergency Management, which was also attended by Met Aaron's weather and flood forecasters, and they were able to give us an update as to what the likely impacts were going to be from Storm Ashley. And then it also gave local authorities and other agencies a chance to coordinate the public safety messaging, which is so important because prevention is better than cure in a lot of cases, Greg. And then we as a team met in Donegal then later on Saturday afternoon. We got updates from our various sections across the council, what works we had done and what works were planned, and operational readiness. And then we also put a press release out then on Saturday afternoon, again, just locally to the media.
Yeah, and it's it's a complicated response to, because obviously, look, in the first instance, Matarin is a national weather forecaster and they will determine an entire region is yellow, orange or red. But it's very different sort of within even our own county, isn't it, where you'll get areas that are very exposed and will get a hammering, and then other areas that could be in a weather warning, and people might say, storm, Ashley, there was no storm. It, you know what I mean? So you have to sort of coordinate with the local knowledge there of what within that warning is likely to escape the worst of it and feel the worst of it.
That's correct, Greg. But also it's the case that we have to prepare for the worst and then hope for the best. And we'd rather have our arrangements in place and not have to use them rather than not have them in place and then being required. So, but you're right in that factors, even like the wind direction at the time of the high tide, can impact the impacts. And our team in particular in Donegal Town would always be watching that, because the Quay Street car park does flood at high tides under certain circumstances. And then right across the county, our teams do know their local areas and have ideas as to where the impacts may be felt. But also, I suppose, as well as the coastal impacts, Greg, you know, those quite high gusty winds over the weekend from Saturday evening right through into yesterday. And we had trees down in at least 20 locations right across the county, even including inland. So we had trees down right across the county.
And I did note, Brian, sorry to cut across you, I did note too that, you know, whilst the wind was still gusting, your crews were out and clearing, obviously where it was safe to do so, but it's never without danger. Your crews were actively out during the storm, clearing those the trees where it was okay to do so.
Absolutely, and one of the dangers with fallen trees is utility lines. There were a few locations where utility lines were impacted by fallen trees, and obviously thanks to our colleagues in both the ESB networks and in AIR that would have worked with our crews in those locations. But when it was safe to do so, and particularly making use of the daylight, Greg, during the course of Saturday evening and yesterday, to try and make sure that the roads were kept clear, because obviously a fallen tree presents hazards for the travelling public as well.
Is there much, obviously crews out again today, is it mainly sort of cleaning up debris, that type of stuff, or is there anything major that your teams are having to deal with? I'm not saying that's insignificant, but you understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, absolutely not. It's mainly debris removal, where the seas may have thrown up debris on coastal car parks or coastal roads, and then anywhere that branches, etc., may have come down on the road, and different, I suppose, clearing round drains and different areas where there'd be debris would have fallen. So that's the main task for today. But again, I suppose just maybe to express thanks to the crews that were out, both our own crews and then the utility contractors that were out over the weekend, when some of us were probably inside with our feet up in front of a nice fire, maybe. And so thanks to them.
Yeah, indeed. Doing great work. Thanks, Brian. Take care of yourself. Brian Cannon there, Director of Roads and Transport with Donegal County Council. To some of your comments now, to what extent does the history in the Bible, especially the historical events of the Old Testament, have any bearing on what's happening today? Your guest said Israel only created in 1958, but sure, Israel is mentioned throughout the Bible, Greg. And the ambassador, the main reason that this atrocity of war is allowed to continue is money. Money, money, money. There are trillions and trillions of dollars being made by both ammunition manufacturers and investors. So, so sad. Greg, great stuff as usual. We all back the Palestinians. That's according to that listener. Many don't, by the way. There are many Israeli supporters as well. Can you ask her why aren't the rich Arab countries helping protesting? If they stopped oil, etc., going to Israel and to the West, I can't understand the wealthy Arab nations not trying to shout and help. Another caller asks, who are Israel accountable to? Loosely, the Americans. Sad to read this, by the way, because I think it's very important that none of us find ourselves in an echo chamber. So today we heard from the Palestinian ambassador, from a Palestinian perspective, how they view the world. In the past, we've heard from Israelis and people who support Israel and support the actions that they do and are very much opposed to what Hamas has done. But unfortunately, in this day and age, some of us can't necessarily listening to a point of view that we don't agree with and then just tune out, which I don't think is very healthy at all. But I respect this listener who, and this, the text reads as follows. Highland, you've lost a listener allowing such biased propaganda on your airwaves. It's a disgrace. If Gaza hands back the hostages it kidnapped over a year ago and rids itself of the terrorists it harbours and is effectively run by and stops firing the thousands of rockets over the border unprovoked, Israel will live in peace. Israel has agreed to many peace deals. The terrorists regroup and restart the attacks. Israel did not expand the war into Lebanon. Hezbollah terrorists had weapons stockpiles ready to attack innocent Israelis. The IDF intelligence-led removal of this threat was a defensive measure. Report correctly or not at all, disgrace. That's fine. I get exactly where you're coming from. But do you, the point here, and the ambassador made the point, is the proportionate response. Was it proportionate? The collective responsibility. You know, there are many people, even in this country, when there were people from this country that were engaged in acts of violence that wouldn't necessarily agreed with it, would have condemned those actions, though that word has strong connotations. But that doesn't mean you would blanket bomb Ireland, does it? A lot of the conversation has been about sort of, you know, proportionate response. Can I come back to that after 11? I simply don't have time for that at this time. So it's about the response. If you believe the response is justified, that's your view. Here we go. Another one. Radio talks and media north and south. It's all shinner bashing. Easy to know that there's a general election soon. We saw this before. I wonder, do people fall for all this amid Micah housing crisis, homelessness, hospital trolley crisis, all at record levels? Mind-boggling. That being said, look, if you look through, people that call this show and many, many other shows, not exclusively this show, the government gets the blame for everything, okay? So defective concrete, obviously, most people, I believe that the government should be doing more. The hospital crisis, the government this, the government that. You know, there's an awful lot of sort of what might come across as sort of anti-government rhetoric, because when people are angry, they direct it at those that make make those decisions. For a long time, sort of, I think, bar one or two outlets nationally, Sinn Féin got a pretty easy ride. So it's not surprising then necessarily that when there are controversies that pop up, that there's going to be quite a level of scrutiny of it, because the government parties are saying, you give us enough hassle, why don't you be fair? It's a tough one, but I think it has to be fair and it has to be as balanced as possible. But you cannot ignore the blatant, obvious controversies that are surrounding Sinn Féin at the moment. They can't ignore them themselves either. I live on a road in Termon with a broken white line. I have to turn up a junction. It's so dangerous. If there is nothing coming, I keep out over the white line so that people can see me turning right. That's back on the roads. Who's picking up the bill for the demolition in the market square? At this point, it seems to be the taxpayer. Another, can you please highlight the rubbish that's dumped at St. John's Pier in Ardra? It's a health hazard. Any pictures of that, by the way, or anything that sort of can help us demonstrate? Hate to see that. What kind of rubbish has been dumped there? Let us know if you have any more information.